Mark 5:1-20. They went across the lake to the region or Gennesaret. When Jesus got out the boat, a man with an impure spirit came from the tombs to meet him. This man lived in the tombs, and no one can bind him anymore, not even with a chain, for he had often been chained hand and foot. But he tore the chains apart and broke irons on his feet. No one was strong enough to subdue him. Night and day, among the tombs and the hills, he would cry out and cut himself with stones. When he saw Jesus from a distance, he ran and fell on his knees in front of him. He shouted at the top of his voice, "What do you want to me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? In God's name, don't torture me." For Jesus had said to him, "Come out of this man, you impure spirit." Then Jesus asked him, "What is your name?" "My name is Legion," he replied, "for we are many." And he begged Jesus again and again not to send them out of the area. A large herd of pigs was feeding on a nearby hillside. The demons begged Jesus, "Send us among the pigs. Allow us to go into them." He gave them permission, and the impure spirits came out and went into the pigs. The herd, about 200 in number, rushed down the steep bank into the lake and were drowned. Those tending the pigs ran off and reported this in the town and countryside, and the people went out to see what had happened. When they came to Jesus, they saw the man who had been possessed by the legion of demons sitting there, dressed in his right mind, and they were afraid. Those who had seen it told the people what had happened to the demon-possessed man and told about the pigs as well. Then the people began to plead with Jesus to leave their region. As Jesus was getting into the boat, the man who had been demon-possessed begged to go with him. Jesus did not let him, but said, "Go home to your own people and tell them how much the Lord had done for you and how he has had mercy on you." So the man went away and began to tell in Decapolis how much Jesus had done for him. And all the people were amazed. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God.
Well, let's pray as we begin. Father God, thank you for your word and all the ways you speak to us through it. Please help us to understand what you're saying to us through the passage, and help us to know you better through this. Amen. Well, today our passage concerns Jesus' identity. Jesus demonstrates who he is and what he does. Well, knowing someone's identity is important to us. We love to discover who people really are. I don't know if any of you have been watching The Masked Singer on Saturday nights. It's a bit of a guilty pleasure of mine. So it's a TV show where a whole bunch of celebrities wear elaborate and very silly disguises, and they perform songs. And you have to guess who they are. They do these little video bits, speaking with disguised voices, and give cryptic clues as to who they are and what they do. You have to try and work out who they are. I can't say I'm very good at it, but many are. There is a certain pleasure in guessing who people are. And whilst it's fun when you realise that the fellow dressed as a traffic cone is in fact Alec Jones off The Snowman, there are some questions of identity that are far more important. And our passage today addresses an instance of that. Our first point is recognition. So as we reach this passage in the book of Mark, we find it in the middle of a whole section on Jesus' identity. Answering the question, who is Jesus, is the main point of the first half of Mark. Jesus, at this stage, had performed many miracles and talked about God and his kingdom. The disciples had seen all of this, but they still hadn't fully grasped who Jesus is. Jesus had been sent by God. That much was apparent. But they hadn't fully understood that Jesus is God, God the Son in human form. So in chapters 4 and 5, we read of a series of miracles that demonstrate to the disciples Jesus' true identity. In chapter 4, he calmed a huge storm just by speaking to it. Later in chapter 5, Jesus heals a chronically ill woman and brings a dead girl back to life. These demonstrate that Jesus is indeed the Son of God. To demonstrate that he is God, he showed that he could do things that only God could do. So there are many these days who struggle to believe in miracles. They don't really ring true with our experience. We can't rationalise them or find ways of understanding how they work. But that is sort of the point. Miracles have to be out of the ordinary, otherwise they're not miracles. If they were everyday occurrences, then they would lose their impact. To demonstrate his deity, Jesus showed that he could do things that only God could do. So on the journey over the lake, Jesus calmed the storm. The disciples had witnessed this and recognised the enormity of it. This was something far beyond anything they'd ever seen before. And yet in the last verse of chapter 4, they're left asking each other, who is this? Even the wind and the waves obey him. Well, Jesus went on to provide more evidence to answer the question. Let's read verses 1 to 5. They went across the lake to the region of Gerasenes. When Jesus got out of the boat, a man with an impure spirit came from the tombs to meet him. This man lived in the tombs, and no one could bind him anymore, not even with a chain, for he had often been chained hand and foot. But he tore the chains apart and broke the irons on his feet. No one was strong enough to subdue him. Night and day among the tombs and in the hills, he would cry out and cut himself with stones. So as Jesus got off the boat, he was met by this man with evil or impure spirits. He was inhabited by evil spirits who controlled what he did. We see that he lived among the tombs, away from the towns, isolating him from others. He was violent towards himself and likely towards others too. He was in great anguish, crying out and cutting himself with stones. The spirits also caused him to be supernaturally strong, able to break iron chains so that no one could subdue him. He was tormented, dangerous and uncontrollable, a terrifying person to encounter. He was completely beyond human help. But he came to Jesus, one full of chaos and evil, the other full of grace and power. It looks like quite a showdown. However, if you're hoping for an epic, well-matched battle of good and evil, then you're going to be disappointed. Instead of a dramatic battle, we see the reaction of the man and the evil spirits. In verse 7, they said, "What do you want with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? In God's name, don't torture me." Even though the disciples hadn't recognised who Jesus is, the evil spirits had. And they were terrified. They knew he is the Son of God. They knew that they were completely subject to him, that they had absolutely no power over him. Well, they were far more powerful than the man himself, more powerful than any man in that region. They had nothing on Jesus. So Jesus drove them out. He simply told them to leave. Verses 11 to 13. A large herd of pigs were feeding on the nearby hillside. The demons begged Jesus, "Send us among the pigs, allow us to go into them." He gave them permission, and the impure spirits came out and went into the pigs. The herd, about 2,000 in number, rushed down the steep bank into the lake and were drowned. The evil spirits were commanded to leave, and they went. They had no other choice in the face of Jesus' incredible power. You may wonder why the demons went into the pigs. It's not something we've seen in other accounts of Jesus driving out demons. Well, there are various suggestions of why it might be. One fairly compelling reason is that it very clearly demonstrates that the evil spirits are gone. It's a big visual sign that the demons have gone, taking their destructive, murderous power with them. We're left in very little doubt of who Jesus is here. The evil spirits themselves tell us who he is, the Son of the Most High God. He shows godlike power in driving them out. So through this, Jesus revealed to the disciples and to us who he is and what he does. He is the Son of God, and he defeats evil. He's showing us that he is able to defeat evil, that he is the only one qualified to do so. So if you're going to have someone do a job for you, you need to know that they're well qualified, that they can do the job. If you need your boiler serviced, you're not going to just grab a screwdriver and sort of poke around and see what happens. You're going to get a qualified heating engineer. If you need a surgery, you wouldn't be satisfied with someone whose only qualification was watching a lot of Holby City. Here Jesus is demonstrating who he is. The Son of God. He is the Son of God, and he's demonstrating that he's the one powerful enough to drive out evil. In this instance, he drives out the evil spirits. But in the wider gospel account, we see how he ultimately defeats evil. By dying in our place on the cross, taking the punishment for the evil that we do, breaking the power that sin has over us, he shatters Satan's hold. We see later in the Bible that one day, Jesus will defeat evil forever and drive it out. Those who have trusted in him will live with him forever in a place where there is no evil and none of the effects of evil, like tears or death or pain. This miracle shows that he has the power to do it. It gives us a little picture of the complete command Jesus has over evil. So for us, if we're trusting in Jesus, we know that everything is under his control. There is still sin in us, but it's defeated. Our sin is fighting a losing battle. It will ultimately be driven out entirely. Sin will not be a part of life forever. However much we sin, however strong its hold on us seems, it's a defeated force and will not last. So whatever sin we're struggling with, one day it will be gone. Be it selfishness, anger, hard-heartedness, gossip, impatience, or any of the many sins that we commit. They will not last. However hard we battle against these sins, sometimes the sin just seems too strong, that we'll never be rid of it. But Jesus has defeated our sin once and for all, and we can look forward to an eternity with it gone forever. Likewise, in this life, we still suffer from evil. People treat us badly. Sometimes truly awful things can happen. Sin messes things up. It damages relationships, causes physical, mental, and emotional harm. Whether it's our own sin or that of others, evil does have an effect, and it can be incredibly hard living with the consequence of that. But Jesus will not let it go on forever. Evil has been defeated, and it will be finally destroyed. Evil will not win. Those who are trusting in Jesus need not fear evil, as Jesus has conquered it for good. Neither do they need to fear the effects of evil, the sadness, the pain, and the sorrow it can cause. Jesus more than just drives out evil, he reverses the effects of it. Where the man was isolated, tormented, and powerless, Jesus made him part of a community again. He restored him to his right mind, gave him a job to do. That's our second point, restoration. So in the first point, you've seen how Jesus drove out the evil spirits, defeated evil, conquered it. But in the second half of the passage, we see the effect that Jesus has on the man himself, how he restores him. The man was a mess. He couldn't control his actions. He was under the malevolent influence of something far more powerful than himself. He was driven to despair and to self-destructive behaviours. He was incapable of living normally. He wasn't able to have relationships with anyone. He was considered a danger, a monster. All we hear about his interactions with the townspeople is their attempts to chain him up and subdue him. He has nothing. Even his sense of self is disappearing. In verse 9 we read this, Then Jesus asked him, "What's your name?" "My name is Legion," he replied, "for we are many." We can also see how he flips between using "my" and "we" in the same sentence. He has nothing other than the evil spirits in him. Even the name he uses refers to this. A legion was the Roman army unit of around 6,000 men. And legion can be used to simply mean many or loads. He doesn't use a name of his own. His identity is solely in his state of possession. Look at the change that Jesus makes. With a few simple words, Jesus drove the evil spirits out. But more than that, he restored the man. He brought him back to his health and sanity. He gave him his identity back and allowed him to reconnect with loved ones. We see in verse 15 that he was sitting there, dressed and in his right mind. In verse 19, he's told to go home to his family and tell of what Jesus has done. Jesus drove out the spirits for several reasons. To demonstrate his identity. To show that his role is to defeat evil. But on top of these, there's another reason. He drove out the evil spirits because he loved the man. It's a slightly flippant illustration. But when I was small, I was always getting stuck in stuff. A combination of a peculiarly shaped head and an innate curiosity about where it would fit meant my mum became a dab hand at applying washing up liquid behind the ears and wiggling me out. It happened embarrassingly frequently. Anyway, but whenever my mum had to get me unstuck, it was never because it was just what mums do. It was never a case of, the boy's got his head stuck in the banisters again, he's blocking the stairs, I better get him shifted. She would help me because I was sad, because I needed help, and because she loved me. It was never a purely functional thing. It was because she loved me. Jesus loved the man. He hated the isolation and the torment and the suffering. So he helped him. He brought the man back into right relationship with himself, with his family, and with Jesus. Out of love, Jesus restored the man to where he should be. That's another part of Jesus' mission. Restoring people to where they should be. We see that throughout the Bible, throughout history, and it's happening today. The man in our passage today had evil in him. He was controlled by evil spirits. The presence of evil in him meant that he couldn't be what he was created to be, in relationship with Jesus or in fellowship with others. But we have evil in us too. It's not an external force like the evil spirits, but it's an internal one. Our sin, our natural inclination to reject God, which is inherent to all humanity, it prevents us from being who we're meant to be, God's children, living in loving relationship with him. But by dying on the cross, Jesus restores us. By defeating sin, he restores us. He allows us to live for him, living in a way to please and to honour him. He allows us to live life as it should be, how we were created to be. This restored relationship with God affects the whole of our lives. It's not something that can be compartmentalised, just a part of our identity. Jesus restored the man and sent him back to his home and to his family. He didn't drive out the evil spirits, restore his sanity, and then just let him carry on living in the tombs. The man's restored status overflowed into his life and transformed it. Jesus had performed the miracle, and by doing it, had transformed the entirety of his life. Likewise, when Jesus restores our relationship with him, he starts to change our whole lives, our character, our relationships, our outlook on life, how we react to different things. He steadily changes our character to be more in line with his, enabling us to live more and more in a way that pleases him, in line with his purposes. In him, we can have life in all its fullness, true life as God created it in the beginning. Jesus is powerful to conquer evil, and he loves us so much that he wants to restore our relationship with him. So we need to respond to him. And that's our third point, response. So when Jesus drove out the spirits and restored the man, you might think that he would get a fairly positive response from those nearby. Let's read verses 14 to 17. Those tending the pigs ran off and reported this in the town and countryside. And the people went out to see what had happened. When they came to Jesus, they saw the man who had been possessed by the legion of demons, sitting there, dressed and in his right mind. And they were afraid. Those who had seen it told the people what had happened to the demon-possessed man, and told about the pigs as well. Then the people began to plead with Jesus to leave their region. News spread fast. The people who were looking after the pigs ran to spread the news far and wide, and soon a crowd had gathered at the scene. They met the man in his restored state, dressed and in his right mind. But the response wasn't one of joy, celebrating with the man, welcoming him back. It wasn't relief and gratitude that a danger had been removed from the area, making it a safer place to live and work. Their response was fear. Granted, a degree of fear would be fairly natural. When faced with power far beyond anything you've ever seen before, a degree of caution isn't inappropriate. We're told in the book of Proverbs that fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. But in their fear, they rejected Jesus. In verse 17, they pleaded with him to leave their region. They ignored his goodness, his gentleness and kindness in restoring the man. They just wanted him gone. Rather than being in reverent awe of him, they were scared of him. Verse 16 gives another clue as to why they rejected him. Those who had seen it told the people what had happened to the demon-possessed man and told about the pigs as well. This suggests that they saw what had happened to the pigs, seen the destruction of property and the damage to business, and they wanted nothing to do with Jesus. They saw Jesus as scary. They didn't like what he was doing. They begged him to leave. So Jesus respected their wishes. He left. The people missed out on meeting with God himself, learning from him, from developing a relationship with him, and experiencing the blessings he would bring, because Jesus made them feel uncomfortable. It's a sadly familiar story. People missing out on everything Jesus brings because they're unable to get past their first impressions of him, or just because they don't want to engage with him. They want to hold him at arm's length and prefer that he left them alone. But the tragedy is that for those who persist in that rejection, Jesus will respect their wishes and leave them alone. They will be separated from him and from every good thing he has created. So if you're not currently trusting in Jesus, please do give the matter due consideration. Please don't be put off by what you think you know about Jesus, or by the inconvenience that following him might cause. At least investigate further what he's done. Do grab one of us afterwards, if that would help. But rejection isn't the only response we see here. Verses 18 to 20. As Jesus was getting into the boat, the man who'd been demon-possessed begged to go with him. Jesus didn't let him, but said, "Go home to your own people and tell them how much the Lord has done for you and how he's had mercy on you." So the man went away and began to tell in the Decapolis how much Jesus had done for him. And all the people were amazed. So having been delivered of the evil spirits, the man is desperate to be with Jesus. He wants to go wherever Jesus goes. He recognises who Jesus is, what Jesus does, and what he's about. And he wants to be part of it. He knew what he'd been rescued from, and he was full of gratitude and love for Jesus. That should be our response too. We know what we've been saved from. We know who Jesus is, how good he is. And we should want to just be with him, to know and to love him. It is easy to be distracted, to lose some of that early zeal for the Lord. But when that happens, it's helpful to remember what Jesus has done for us. when that happens. Our salvation is an even bigger transformation than the one in this passage, at a much greater cost to Jesus. So remembering what he has done, dwelling on what that means, it can be really helpful in restoring our love and enthusiasm for him. But in Mark 5, the time wasn't right for the man to go with Jesus. Jesus had a job for him first, sending him back to his home, to his family, to tell others the good news. He was to show himself and to tell of Jesus' mercy in restoring him. This too is something we can emulate. We want to be with Jesus, but the time isn't right for us to be with him physically yet. We still have work to do. The job he's left us is to spread the word, to reach out to others with the gospel, the good news of him, to show others what he's like. The upcoming Life 22 events in April would be a great way to do this. A series of fun events with short introductions to Christianity, designed to be easy to invite friends or family to. Like the townspeople in the passage, we can expect that we'll sometimes meet opposition. Not everyone will be receptive to Jesus' message, but some will be. We can trust Jesus that he will work through his word to bring many to him. This passage from Mark has the potential to seem a little alien to us. It happened 2,000 years ago, on a different continent, and it involved situations that are very unfamiliar to us. Yet it did happen. This is a true story. And the truths shown in this story are still true. Jesus is God. He drives out evil, and he restores people into relationship with him. Whatever situation we may be in, whatever circumstances arise, this is true. And like the man, we should respond with gratitude and devotion to God for saving us for relationship with him.